And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 92. Number 92. My name is Silas Lindenstein. I am I'm your host today for Black and a Half. And with me today is Joseph Greenhour coming in again. Coming in again, back again to chat with me today. Today's episode is all about the movie Parasite. Joe and I went and saw this movie. And then we went right back to the Black and a Half nerd cave and started talking about the movie. A wonderful movie. Wonderful movie. I recommend it. You'll hear us talk about it. So here's the thing for this episode. If you don't care about spoilers for movies, just go listen. Go listen right now and let's talk about this. Or if you've seen the movie Parasite, go in and you can listen and enjoy the discussion on this. And I think you'll want to jump in the middle of it. We give a few things away in it. We talk a lot about sort of what the film messages the film has, but we do make some slips in there and talk about some big things in the film. So it's all up to you. I don't know who you are. You know, I wouldn't listen to this episode if I didn't watch it. But I'm a spoiler. I'm a crazy spoiler guy. Anyway, before we get into it, a little housekeeping. If you are enjoying this program, please go to iTunes and rate us. Give us a 5-star rating, leave a review, and that helps this show immensely. The other thing you can do is share this episode. Share it on your Facebook, on your Twitter, on your Instagram, whatever. Tell people you really enjoy this show. It helps us immensely. And if you're feeling extra saucy in your like for us, you can go to Patreon, Patreon. Go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and become a patron of the Black and a Half. Just you can throw a couple dollars at us each month, and it helps pay for this program to be out there. It does that. And if you also supporting the show, if you are in the Seattle area and looking to buy or sell a home, you can go to silasgetsreal.com and learn all about buying a home and get connected with a wonderful agent like Black and a Half's own Silas Lindenstein. And that's it. Also, go follow us on Twitter. Look up Black and a Half Podcast on Twitter, Instagram. We're all on there, or follow me at Silas Laughs. I post stuff about there more than I do. I need to get better with the social media for Black and a Half, those ones, but it's at Silas Laughs on both Instagram and Twitter. I post the updates there. Follow me on Facebook, you know, go to all of them and enjoy the show. And that's it. That's it. All I got for you. Of course, Joseph Greenhour is also the, we call him the Orchid King of Seattle. You can check him out at Emerald City Orchids. I'm buying orchids all the time from him, for my wife, for my stepmother. Everyone's getting orchids, and he's my orchid dealer. I go by Fred Myers, and I scoff at theirs. I get some quality ones from Emerald City Orchids, so be sure to check them out. And upcoming dates, I'll be at Emerald City Comic Con in March. I believe it's the weekend of March 15th. Saturday, we'll be performing at the Real Nerds of Comedy. And also upcoming February 23rd, Sunday night, I'll be in Bothell at Decibel Brewing. I'll be headlining there. So if you're in the Bothell, Washington area that weekend, come check me out. Say hi and enjoy a brewski. You can buy me one after or something like that, or become a patron. Either way. Thank you for listening, and very excited for you to listen to this episode. Episode number 92, Parasite.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Join us. Impressive. Join us.
live long and prosper and prosper and prosper and prosper.
I did not know anything about this movie before we went in there.
But isn't that the best?
I enjoy a movie much more that way. I saw two things online where people were like, it's good. And that was like literally all it said. I didn't even know the movie was in Korean. I had no idea it was even like a foreign film. And I was a little worried once the previews kind of worried me because horror as a genre scares me. And I thought it was going to be a horror movie.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the previews.
It's kind of intense. It's an intense movie. No, there was two horror previews.
Okay.
But it was the movie's intense, but it's definitely not a horror movie.
No, but I'll tell you I was scared the last half hour.
It's very intense.
Because I had no idea what was going to happen. I was so like, what the fuck is going to happen?
It's the situation. It's one of these movies where the situation is bad and it just kind of keeps getting worse. Yeah. And the movie starts out, it's kind of a comedy. It's like really funny. Like, I like this family. Like, this family is like quirky and weird. And they're like,
family of
they're like
Connors.
Grifters. Yeah. They're like this weird, they're like weird, petty thieves that, you know. But then they're like, they also, it's just, they're kind of beautiful the way they get drunk together. And they seem like a loving, supportive family. Like, the mom and dad kind of love each other. And they, and, you know, and the kids are, respected, like the daughter, the dad's so proud of her for being such a good grifter.
You're such a you could go to art school. You're just so good.
Just
forgery,
just making stuff up. Yeah, like why doesn't Oxford have a forgery program?
Yeah,
I thought that was great, but yeah, then the situation starts getting worse and worse and worse. I like, you know, it's weird. The other thing too, that kind of like, I don't want to. It kind of alarmed me was that because it's a Korean movie, I was thinking about like other movies that I've like old movies like Old Boy.
I don't know.
Old Boy is you haven't seen Old Boy?
No, is it Korean?
Yeah, it's more weird, like people in basement for 20 years type stuff.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's some weird shit in it. And I was like, oh God, it's this thing, you know, how far is this? Is it going to go full Old Boy? Like, what's going to happen? You know what I was kind of worried about too? And this is like, I was kind of worried that the rich family was going to end up being like
monsters or.
Yeah. Cause you're wondering who's the parasite, right? And like this,
yeah.
The obvious parasite is like these people that are like, you know, trying to glom onto this family because they need money.
Yeah.
They're poor and this family's rich and they're just going to try and leech as much money out of this family as possible. And that's a parasite. But I also thought like, I thought that was going to be like a weird twist at the end that like the family was in on it the whole time and like is paying them significantly less than the previous family or something like that. And, like I thought we were going to find out that like they started out with like a real deal butler from England and they're just paying people less and less and less. And everybody's like pretending to be the jobs and they figured out, I don't know, but it didn't come to that. I thought that's where they were going to go with it.
I don't know what point it was. Okay. So everything changed when it started raining, right?
Yes.
And I actually knew I was like, no, something's going to happen. This rain's going to mess up what the plans of the family. Yeah, so rain is going to, I'm like, that's going to be a change. They're going to get caught. I was all tense that they're going to get caught.
Well, they kind of did. And they built a lot of tension on that. They built a ton of tension on that. And they went overboard too. Like they're like the mom and dad decided to sleep on the couch. Like,
they've
never done that before. Right.
Yeah.
Just to build the extra tension.
I'm wondering, I don't watch a lot of foreign films because I'm racist, right? No.
I think it's reading. It's all the words on the screen. You do it in Star Wars, buddy. You can't do it for this, too?
Really? Limited. I think it is, you know, like the last time I saw a subtitled film in the theater was Life is Beautiful.
You're kidding.
No. Otherwise, I don't really. No, actually, that's not true. I did. So I think I did go to. I've seen a few actually, Brazilian films, and for SIFF.
Yeah, it's weird because you know this is kind of what I've been. You know, one of the last times I came to talk about a movie with you we were talking about the Marvel films, and this is one of the things that kind of upsets me about these movies, is that they're big blockbusters, and they're telling these great mythological stories with these fantastic heroes, but they're washing so much stuff out. Like, there's so many things that just aren't getting any screen time at the theaters that are wonderful movies with excellent stories. This was a brilliant story. The story is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and it was dark and twisted, and it had so much, you know, it had a lot of human element to it. There was the characters are all sort of, you know, there's a complexity to them. And I think there was they definitely were pushing archetypes, but, like, you know, you had the rich family, and then there's an upstairs,
downstairs. So much about classism in
classism.
This.
Well, Korean cultures, you know, my former mother-in-law came from Korea, and, you know, Korean culture is definitely, it's a capitalist society. And I think there's a lot of obsession with class and welfare. The whole video Gangnam Style is about that. You know, the Gangnam District is an area. Basically, it was, I think it was south of the river, and Seoul is this area. It was all owned by farmers. It was kind of like, you know, kind of a poor area. And then the land became worth a lot because, like Seattle, they were just building. Right. And then this district, the Gangnam District, had all these people that just, like, overnight millionaires, farmers that sold these things that got turned into, like, rows and rows of condos. And it's just, like, millionaires overnight. I think that's what that, you know, that video's about. But there's definitely, like, this obsession with money and class. And, you know, it's a very capitalist society. And this message that's kind of going with this movie, there's a little bit of that upstairs, downstairs element, you know, where you have, like, kind of the Downton Abbey style, like, servants versus, the masters of the house. And then they literally have, like, you know, this whole secret world underneath. You know, I thought it was interesting how, you know, the real struggle in the movie isn't between the rich people and the poor people. It's between the poor people and the other poor people. And they're fighting and they're fighting for who gets to reside in this dingy hole under the rich man's house.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this weird, and there's a lot of, I think there was a lot of, like, imagery, and what I like this movie, because I think it had a lot of intent to it. I think when they made the movie, they very carefully chose the imagery, and you could tell they put a lot of thought into it, and the dialogue too. The lady, the wife's calling the dad a cockroach. And she's saying, as soon as something would go wrong, your dad would cockroach out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they had the scene early on about what the little roach or whatever you want. Fumigation.
And the fumigation. Fumigation, which had nothing to do with the story. Right. It was just like this weird thing they put into it's I think, you know, the son keeps saying, oh, it's so metaphorical. But that's like everything
line
in the movie.
This is metaphorical.
Everything was metaphorical in that movie. Like, but yeah, like they call him. There's a motif of insects. He's a roach. Yeah. You could say he gets fumigated. He wants to fumigate his own house for free because he doesn't want he wants to get rid of that roachiness that's part of his life. And they talk about, like, the smell, like that vermin smell. That's when he loses it too. He feels less than human because the guy.
I don't want to ruin the very end. I don't know. I'm not sure we should go to the very end.
Haven't people who listen to this already seen it, presumably?
I would hope, sort of, but I don't want to ruin every little moment of it. Like, in case. There's some people who listen
Fine, but then that's, you know, the sense of disgust that comes from it. That reminded me of there's a book called by Emile Zola called Germinal, which is about a French coal miner's strike. And there's a part in the book where there's this family of coal miners, and the elder of the family is this guy's name is Bonamart, which means good death.
Yeah.
Right. And he sees the rich mine owner's daughter eating, like, this little brioche, and they're all starving. Right. There's they're on strike because they're starving.
Yeah.
And he sees this girl, like, eating this perfectly baked brioche, and he loses his shit and he strangles her. And it's like the end of this book is like this old man strangling this little girl, this rich little girl, because she's eating this pastry while they're all, you know, they're all marching in the streets because they can't find an onion, you know? And I think there's, like, this, there's sort of a moment like that, and that frustration, you know, it comes from like feeling less than, right?
Yeah. I do you find, since I don't watch a ton of foreign film, do you find that a lot of them are genre bending more so than the U.S. films?
I think,
or is it just indie films are more?
I think indie films, yeah, but I think also anytime a movie is forced to resort to writing,
yeah,
it ends up, you end up, you know, when this movie had a lot of thought put into it, the story, the imagery, the whole thing with the fumigation and the whole cockroach motif, you know, that whole sort of like that sort of little theme that sort of runs through the movie. And the way they layer in with the imagery, you know, and this kind of stuff, that's a lot of thought goes into that. And I'm not saying that, you know, the Marvel movies don't have that kind of thought going into it, but you know, they're like, wouldn't it be cool if Thor smashed this with a hammer? And then that's like, you know, that's what keeps the audience attention. Whereas in this movie, they build tension and they, you know, and there's like all these layers and like the weird twists and turns, like, you know, when the lady shows up, wants to get something out of the basement, and you're like, what's she going to go get out of the basement? Like, I mean,
yeah.
I didn't understand.
Oh, yeah, that was.
I don't know. I would never let her in. I'd be like, why didn't you tell me what it is, and I'll go get it for you and bring it to the door.
She has a black eye. And
right,
and
like, her face is all messed up. They never even explain that, why her face is all messed up and why she's like, you know, why she looks beat up.
I thought it was the debtors. Like, I thought it was the people.
That she got attacked.
But she didn't. She just said.
They never explain it. They don't explain it.
Yeah.
Which, not everything needs to be explained, and in a good movie, they can leave the right stuff out, and your imagination can kind of fill it in. But yeah, her face is, somebody worked it. It does not look good, you know. And
I want something out of the bay. I was like, I was just so, what's going on? I was. There's not many movies. I think I went to see Knives Out. You know, the mystery,
right?
Was getting recognized, and this movie was like what I wanted that to be. I went in to see like, oh, I can't wait, a mystery, like I'm not gonna know what's going on, I'm gonna be so much suspense, and it wasn't really that suspenseful. But this one, I was just,
this movie
was freaking the fuck out.
I was like, freaked out like a horror movie, but it wasn't scary in that way. The other thing too is like the name, you know, the name of the movie, Parasite's very simple name.
Yeah.
And it has implications where, you know, you're like, okay, this is who's going to end up being the parasite. It's kind of like, you're wondering who it is. Like the obvious candidate is like this family, right?
And it's the art. I think because it's an art film, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a metaphor for some, like it's going to be unexpected.
I think it's a statement on capitalism. Yeah. It's definitely a statement on our society. Like that part's clear. But what's interesting is that, like, you know, you've got this family. And then the lady who's the maid before, you know, then I'm thinking, oh, is she going to be like, who's going to be the diabolical genius behind everything? Right. But it turns out there's not really everybody's kind of a fuck up. There's not really any diabolical genius. And it kind of goes back to the dad, right? The dad says, like, you know,
a plan.
The plan. Yeah. Well, who needs a plan?
Don't be disappointed.
You won't be disappointed if you don't have a plan, and nothing goes, you know, you're never off the plan because there is no plan. He just said it to calm his kids down in the moment, right? But he was, his whole thing was he was just footloose and fancy free. Without planning, he was also not able to provide for his family.
Yeah.
You know, like his kind of attitude is definitely why they're poor.
I'm like, like, I want to know how this family gets to this point. You know, like, what did you do that you get your whole family on? Like a whole family of con artists just seems so crazy to me. I mean, I guess I know it does exist, but
I know people who are scammers that are kids of scammers, and you know, their parents are scammers. We have, like, you know, people who are, you know, coupon clippers, or like there's that guy who's always like,
I don't think coupon clippers aren't scammers.
No, but I, you know what
that's
I'm
where
saying?
It starts there's, though, right?
There's always some people who are like into some, like, I don't mean coupon clipping like to save the money on whatever it is you're buying. There's people who are like professional coupon clippers. They like cut the coupons, and then there's like some weird loop around for redeeming them, You get like 4 cents a coupon. That was an old thing. Like I knew parents. Like I had friends whose parents would like do this thing.
Oh, you go to double coupon day.
Yeah, and you can like you could go like if they found like the right free publication, they'd take a stack of them because there was a coupon in it that was worth at least like 50 cents, so they could like redeem that thing, you know. And there's always somebody who's looking for some, you know, there's always somebody who's looking for some short term fix for their How many people you know are like, oh, I'm going to go do this next? And you're like, oh, my God, this thing you're doing. Well, you, what? You're going to do what now? Like, you've already done all this other stuff. What happened to the, you know, you talk to your buddy. You're like, what happened to the steak business? What happened to the, you know, to the balloon business? You know, like all these different crazy schemes some people come up with. I'm kind of like that. So I get it. I mean, I'm always like getting involved.
But yours are legit.
Mostly
legit.
I have a lot of crazy ideas. But that old lady, like the lady who was like, that was like part of that. That character was like suspicious to me because she was from the old owner of the house and then transfers to the new owner of the house. Like that already, I was like, okay, alarm bell. Like when they said that, I'm like, oh, she's going to end up coming back. Like I thought she was going to like murder the whole family and get away with it or something like that. I kind of thought like she was going to be the parasite. Like somehow she was the roach that came with this house or whatever. But no. Like, she was a parasite. They were, like, hiding her husband down there or whatever. Yeah. But it wasn't, like, that wasn't, like, it was kind of an innocent thing. She was just, they were just broke and needed to hide her husband because they owed the loan the sharks. Mob. They owed the mob money, you know. You got in debt to the wrong people. And I think that, you know, predatory lending, right?
Sometimes I forget that, like, loan sharks are a real thing still.
Yeah.
And I know they are, but I'm like, I don't know that I could find one if I needed to, like other than a credit card type thing. Like, I don't know if
credit is predatory just as it is.
Yeah.
And
but I mean, someone who like they'll break your legs kind of level.
Well, yeah, you subject yourself to it even on the, like, you know, you're in real estate. A home mortgage is basically like, you know.
They're not going to break your legs for not paying your mortgage.
No, but they'll take away your house.
Yeah,
but they'll financially break your legs.
Yeah.
You know, if you're forced to declare bankruptcy, you're fucked up for a while.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff happens. It does happen. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
When you're on the streets, you're dealing with things on a street level, you know, that's a street. They take interest different on the street, you know?
Yeah.
But that was interesting that, you know, they had that, it was a weird cycle, right? It was like the old people that were like the old roaches. And then it's just like with regular roaches, you get rid of them and then like a new family of roaches. New roaches just move right in.
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
You know, like.
This writing is seriously going to stay with me. Like, this is one of those films that I feel like is a master class in filmmaking. Like, I'm more inspired to do a film, like, after watching this than any of the other Academy Award nominated movies. I'd say I'm more inspired by this one.
I thought this kind of movie is what I really enjoy because it's layered. And again, I think, like, everything was pretty intentional, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's all these little bits of dialogue and they throw in these little things that are, you know, we also lose a bunch because of translation.
I wondered about that. I was like, how many little jokes or just things that just don't translate or the official translator just kind of made it a little wonky? Like,
yeah, and there's
line.
Also like there's cultural things too, right? Mm-hmm. Like a person, you know, like in Korean, when people are talking, sometimes they'll make that weird moaning noise. This is, as a Westerner, is really strange, but like you'll be talking to somebody and in the middle of saying something, they start going, you know, and it's for us, it's the same as saying, yeah, you know, yeah. It's meant to encourage the person you're talking to keep talking. Yeah. Right. But like I've been talking to people like, you know, Korean people and they start making this noise and I'm like, are you okay? Do I need to stop talking to get you some water or something? Like, what's going on? But then, and then I realize like, oh, it's just a cultural difference. But if you're not familiar with the culture, you know, I think there's lots of little things that, you know, just the way people have conversations and little things like, you know, like those uh-huhs and yeahs and, you know, Yeah, I kind of got the feeling like with this family, there was like a, I felt like there was like a really kind of a sweet, warm family dynamic to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that sort of came through without the language, right? Just the way,
but they have to be, right?
I guess.
Like, I mean, they're the protagonists, I guess.
They are the protagonists of the story, film, like them
so
or not.
You got to kind of like them.
They were likable. Like they were likable. Yeah. And like, you know, the dad was like kind of proud of his kids.
Yeah.
You know, like when his son got a job, he's like, I'm proud of you, son. Right.
You faked your way to
you
it.
You faked your way.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. Oh, so they said there was a point that they said, oh, well, we need to do this and move, get her into housekeeping. And they said, oh, so we're going to accelerate more than usual. Like, yeah, it made like it seem like they've done this
they've
before.
They've done this before. Yeah.
And actually, when they said when they had the qualifications to join the service, to get the for the guy to join the service, you know, and they said, oh, we need a copy of your house deed. And I was like, are they going to take it over? I thought they were going to take it
That's
over.
That's what I thought, too. They were like they had a lot of, and I thought maybe that was like the long term goal was that they were going to find a way to grift this.
And I was trying to figure out, wait, they're going to take this whole thing. And I'm like, but then do they have to get jobs to pay its mortgage or what do they do?
Well, they had that conversation where they were having like their little party in the living room before the family comes back.
Yeah.
The conversation is like, it's going this way. It's going this weird way where they're like, well, what if we lived here? And, you know, you think the movie, that's like, that's what a movie, the narrative is pushing you.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and I think Korean movies have like Old Boy and some of these other ones I've seen, maybe it's a thing, but they really like come out of left field with this element, this bizarro element, right? This, you know, you think it's going a certain way. And then the old housekeeper shows up and her face is all bloody or whatever. And you're like, what is this fucking lady want? And it gets so weird. The whole secret basement becomes a thing.
There was no, because there were no clues.
No clues.
And which is, I think, I don't know if it's, if that's refreshing or if it is, I feel like people would complain about that if this was an American film. They'd be like, there was no foreshadowing. There's no little clue.
If it was
it.
A Star Wars movie, they definitely
would
complain.
Oh, they would go nuts.
People would
that
lose
was not established.
Mind. Right. They. I mean, if you had like some random element that came in and changed the direction of the narrative in the second half of the movie, like out of left field.
Like, I mean, like Leia in Last Jedi, that pissed people off because they're like, there was no clue that she had the Force. I'm like, well, there was.
Well, there was books about it.
I know.
It. Like, it was talking about?
And previous films. But,
and they were like,
but people lost their
Yoda's
shit.
And like, no, there is another. You know, and they're like, oh, there was no clue. There was no clue. Like, it so, was it was in a movie in 1982. Like, there was a clue, a big clue. So, Luke's leaving and Yoda's like, oh, you got a sister.
So, let alone within the same movie. Like the same movie, it's still shocking that there's no like little clue that there's something else to this.
Well, when that lady shows up, because she's polished, right? That lady looks really good. She's very composed. She clearly runs this house. Like
I thought
an
there
ace.
Were video cameras in the place and she had been watching them or something.
You really think that there's like this lady, because she looks so good, that she's going to do something diabolic?
Because so many movies, it is that prissy woman.
But then she shows up and she's a wreck. And she's desperate to get to this man who's living like a rat beneath their house, you know? And he's also like, the way he like grovels at the, you know, like, like thanking the master of the house for letting him live there. It's like, he's not letting you live here. Why are you, you know? And then,
well, he's providing food for him unknowingly, but he's providing it.
It's just, it's part of, I think it's part of like the you know,
that is a capitalist thing too, isn't
is
it?
That
it's
part
like,
of the
oh, thank you for the scraps that I'm getting.
Yeah, and it's like weird, literally trickle down economics. Like he's down in the basement eating scraps from their fridge. They don't even know he's there. They don't care he's there. They've never thought about him. They have their actions during the
you
day.
You have a basement. You have a lower. Are you going to be concerned now when you go home
about
is
having
there
a,
someone else in here?
Right, about having a
sure. Is there a bomb shelter?
Is there a maid's husband been living down here? The lady who cleans my house every 3 weeks is sneaking down Oreos, just got a family living down there. I don't know. It's weird, but yeah, she shows up and like you think she's, you know, and there's also like this weird power struggle for the basement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to like there's like the ruthlessness of the two matriarchs, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, queens of their little like it's like when two queens fight for a hornet's nest or whatever. Like the cockroach queens, right?
Yeah.
The one cockroach queen fights for the space for her other cockroach queens. You know, the two families are at it, but it's really the queens who decided it. And that's kind of how it ends, you know, how it happens. Yeah. Like the one lady decides. I also like the, you know, it seemed like the one person in the story that had, the one protagonist that had any potential was the daughter, right?
Yeah.
She was the one that actually like had all of the talent and bullshitted away as like some art therapist or whatever. Uh-huh. Got the kid behaving like they didn't even explain that either. Like, how did she get that kid to behave so well all of a sudden?
Well, remember the sister was like, he's faking it. Like, she didn't even think he needed anything.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So maybe it was, and maybe it just gets okay. Actually, I can explain it because she's like a babysitter. And my freaking kids don't do a lot of things until the babysitter comes.
Right.
And suddenly they're little angels with the damn babysitter. The okay, oh, I'll take my socks off now. Of course, that makes sense. Yeah. So
right. They know what they're supposed to do.
Within behavior. Yeah. I can't even decide who my favorite character. My daughter has always asked me that. Who is your favorite character?
I like them all, but I thought the daughter was my favorite character, and you know she gets it the worst.
Oh. How old was the family that lived there? How old was the daughter?
Well, they said she was in high school, so she's probably like 16. They said in 2 years she's going to go to college. So
the kid who was tutoring her, do you think about the same age?
Yeah, he seemed like...
He's giant compared to her. He was way taller than her.
Yeah, so I was like, it seemed like his buddy had just gone, or was just about to go to college, so he was probably like a senior in high school, and that girl's like a sophomore, junior in high school.
Sometimes I thought he looked kind of older, and I was like, "How old is she supposed to be?"
Impression that based on his relationship with his buddy, that his buddy was going to college, okay. So they were like at this age where he had just finished high school, was going to finish high school, or his friend had finished high school and was about to go to college.
Yeah. Okay. So it was okay. That's reasonable.
So he's like a recent high school graduate, and then this girl's gonna graduate in a couple of years. I mean, it's still. I don't know. There's an age difference, but I think he wasn't like grossly age inappropriate. They were both teenagers or close to it.
Okay,
but the daughter's older, like the grifter daughter.
Yeah. She seemed old.
Also, I thought the family structure was interesting too, because you have like mom, dad, older sister, younger brother for both the families.
Well, yeah.
You know, so like in this weird way, you have they're sort of like, I don't know, like these weird, if you take those family archetypes and then you plug them into it, you sort of get these different answers.
Oh, I guess you see, yeah.
You know, like how does this dad handle a situation versus how does that dad handle a situation? Or what's the situation with this daughter versus that daughter? Or... You know?
Oh, and the fascination with Native Americans, I thought.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
I was like, I wonder if that's a common thing. It made me think about like, oh, I wonder what people in other countries, what grabs the attention of like kids there for what's over here.
It seemed like the way that kid was behaving and their sort of interpretation of like Native American culture seems a lot like 1950s American Roy Rogers style.
Yeah.
You know, like our parents' generation when they were growing up. Like, I know my dad was like into cowboys and Indians. That was like one of, you know, that generation's thing. Now we look at it and it's like makes us kind of cringe because we're just like, eh, like that's, that's not an appropriate use of that culture. Like, you know,
but I was actually just glad it was like, oh, well, this isn't some white people sitting here doing it. It's like, oh, they're crazy. They have no idea. So I'm fine with them misusing it.
It's in this weird
headdress.
Way. Yeah. It's like,
I was like, they're not woke.
They're not woke.
That'd be like me dressing up, me getting a sari, right? Or something.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that also happens too with, like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, white people in America are going to jack it, whatever it is. It's some Korean dress or it's an American Native American thing.
Yeah.
But it was kind of weird with the, like, the dads and the headdresses, you know? Yeah. And, that family's like, it was, they all got called into work after, like, the worst night of their lives.
I was like, their house, guys smell like poo now.
Their house gets destroyed. They slept in a gym.
Yeah.
They've got that Subway smell. The dad doesn't like the Subway smell. There's people beneath us that smell like the Subway, you know? And it smells like that in the basement of his own house, you know?
I love that he's like, oh, those people smell like Subway. I hate that. Now, let me finger you now. Like, that's...
And then, you know, and then the mom's like, I haven't been on a Subway in years, you know, like the whole thing, the dad. And then he's got to hear it too. Like, can you imagine how insulting that is?
Oh, yeah.
You got to lay and your family's got to hear it. And like, they got to talk about how you stink and you smell like sewer rat. Well,
even the son said it. He's like, oh, they all smell the same. You smell like.
Oh, yeah. That was one of those tense moments where you thought the family was going to get outed.
Yeah.
Well, because they were right on the edge of their deception.
Yeah.
These movies, anytime there's a story that involves a deception, when they play with the edge of the deception about whenever anybody's about to get caught. But then they layer that and they have to have, like, you know, multiple things that are. When you found out the old housekeeper also had a deception, but hers was like.
Yeah, it's huge.
You know, hiding a whole extra person in the house. And then the dad even mentions, like, oh, yeah, she ate for two, you know.
I missed that line, and
he was talking about, like, oh, she was always eating too much.
That makes sense. Oh, she's good call. You remember?
She's eating
that.
For two. This movie had all kinds of these little. There was lots of little shit they dropped. There's a breadcrumb for sure. Like, I bet you, if you went back, this is what.
How'd you remember that? I just don't remember.
It was a significant part of their conversation between the two of them, because they were, you know, it was a front seat, back seat between the chauffeur and them, and they were kind of talking about their lives, and they had a candid conversation, you know, and he was saying, well, at least you love her, right?
I still want to know. I felt like there was more to that.
Yeah, there was.
Like, he was crossing the line. I was like, is this motherfucker cheating on her?
Well, is he also like, is this guy asking me if I'm cheating on my wife, you know?
Yeah.
And then he kept saying, like, you know, oh, he comes close to the line, but he doesn't cross the line, right?
Except the smell.
Except for that smell. That smell crosses, that sewer rat smell, right? That cockroach smell. You can't get it off of you. You can't. You're stuck with it. But that conversation was important. I could tell in the story that there was, like, you know, again, this movie felt like there was a lot of intention to it. So that conversation really felt like it was loaded with something, right? And when he said, whenever they mentioned the old housekeeper, you know, she was on my suspects list because it's a bit of a mystery, right?
Yeah.
Who's the cockroach or who's the parasite, right? And I'm thinking she's like the big parasite. And when he says she was eating for two, right? Then I was like, that did kind of like raise a little alarm bell for me. But then when I saw the guy like in the basement, I'm like, oh, eating for two. God damn. You know, she really was like taking enough food for two people.
I was kind of calling her fat.
The thing. You think he's calling her fat because she is an older woman and she's, you know, got a physical stature. But she wasn't fat. She was not like, you know, some crazy big lady. She just seemed like a regular.
I like that, though. I'm going to put that in my bio.
Eating size, for two.
I don't know. I've got a physical stature.
I've got a physical stature. That's a dignified stature.
Next comic on the stage has a physical stature. And
he can't eat for two. But that's weird because like the rich people in that movie are kind of oblivious, but they're also like not because they're right on top of it the whole time. They can tell when stuff is off, right? The kids, like, they all smell the same, right? And for them, it's like this classist thing was like, yeah, poor people all smell the same, but they smell the same because they're from the same house and eating the same food, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like, you know,
the reaction to the panties.
Oh,
that was a delightful scene. They're like, oh no.
The schizophrenia corner. The schizophrenia corner.
Oh, is that too? No, the panties. Sorry, panties. The underwear. The underwear.
Oh, right. I thought you said paintings.
Paintings, yeah. No, I get that. Let's get that. Was a good. But that mom was wonderful. Well played. That was the wealthy mom.
Yeah,
solid actor.
She's, I think, really. There's sort of like this blissful ignorance. She wasn't stupid, right? She definitely like had this.
How'd they describe her? They said something about gullible. Was it about being gullible?
Well, they used him as gullible. You know, that's the other. That another one of my suspects on this whole thing too is the guy in the beginning who gives them the referral. I'm like, did this guy grift them? He kind of did, just because he was just taking an easy money tutoring gig.
Yeah,
and he liked the daughter. In that way, like he was sort of moving in, but he was also going off to university because he could, you know?
Yeah.
But then these people were so desperate. They were like, we're moving in and we're not leaving. We live here now.
So this film won Best Foreign Film at the Golden Globes.
I didn't watch the Golden Globes. I watched Ricky Gervais's opening thing. Yeah. But.
So it's up for Best Picture and Best Foreign Film.
It got the Palme d'Or. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Huh?
The Palme d'Or.
What's that?
That's at the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, did it? Okay.
That was the first thing on the credits.
When the
movie starts, it says winner of the Palme d'Or in Cannes 2019.
Oh, that's right.
And then as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, shit, we're about to see a movie.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing a real thing here.
So, have you seen many of the other nominees or for the Academy Awards?
No, I'm kind of catching up on some of the movies from last year, and I don't have much time because they're coming up
next week. I mean, do you think this is something that you could see winning an Academy Award, like a Best Picture? Part of me wonders, is it too light? Like,
I thought it was an excellent movie.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed it, and I thought it was well written and well crafted. And again, there's a density to it. I think the things that you can tell they made a lot of choices so that when the movie, I have a friend whose big thing with movies is rewatch value is what he calls it.
Yeah.
If a movie has a rewatch value, and I think this movie definitely does. I think if you watch this movie again, you would probably see all kinds, knowing at the end that what you know, having seen it the first time, you would see all kinds of brilliant little clues left along the way. Cause I think it feels like, you know, when you experience a movie the first time, you're led on this journey. You don't know where you're being taken. And after you've seen it the first time, you know where the journey ends. Then you kind of get to go back and enjoy the journey aspect. And I think if you go back and watch this movie, my instinct is, having only seen it once, my instinct is on the second watching, it's probably got a lot of little things in there. And a movie like that, you know, they don't make a lot of movies like that. I think it was a good movie. I can definitely see it winning Best Foreign Film. Best Picture, at the Oscars, it's always political. And it's voted on by a bunch of jerk-offs in Los Angeles that are, you know.
A lot of the times the films that are going to win Best Picture, I probably wouldn't watch again. I might like it, but I'm not going to watch it.
Well,
like 12 Years a Slave, wonderful film. I'm never going to watch it again. It was horrible, like, to go through emotionally.
Yeah, that's a hard movie to watch. But then there's also other movies. Like, there was the year that Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction were both nominated. And Forrest Gump won.
Oh.
Forrest Gump was the winner that year. And, you know, like, it's not a better movie than the other movies. It was kind of masturbatory about American culture.
Yeah.
It was definitely one of these things where, like, they used CGI in a very effective way. It was very early in CGI that the way they were able to put Forrest Gump in these iconic, historic American. And then the whole thing just reeked of, you know, nationalistic, masturbatory, you know, just America jerked itself off of that movie.
And also what can happen just because of the way voting works is Shawshank and what was the other one?
Pulp Fiction.
They both could have got split votes, and then that one popped up. Well, I still think that's how Marissa Tomei won her Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
wonderful, but there were some other great actors in there.
There's also movies, too, where, you know, that they win the award. Not, you know, like De Niro wins a movie and a Best Actor award, and it's like, okay, this wasn't Raging Bull, right?
Yeah.
We know you were the best actor in Raging Bull, but we're going to give you the Oscar for this thing. you know.
I feel like De Niro's like Meryl Streep. They shouldn't be allowed in to be nominated anymore.
Because we just know.
I think we just acknowledge, yeah, you guys are like the best actors.
Can you just give them a lifetime achievement every year?
Yeah.
just do that.
You're the best actors. We know, so this.
We know you're in a movie this year.
Someone else.
I like Meryl Streep. I think she's a wonderful actress. It's just, yeah, you do kind of get tired of some people being the only good actors, right? Yeah. Like, but you can't go around giving people, you know, you couldn't just hand her an Oscar for the thing that she won. You got to give her the Oscar for the thing later to acknowledge it.
So I think this film is, I think it's fantastic. I don't think it'll hit the level of Best Picture. Even though I think it probably is the most, it's the film I want to watch again more than any other film that I've watched. I've seen almost all of them now. I think I want to see, I think 1917 is going to win because it's amazing.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's an amazing, it's an amazing filmmaking achievement based off of its,
it looks like it has a lot of really amazing shots, long tracking shots, you know.
They simulate it to look like it's one shot through the whole film.
Right. And now they've done that a few times with some different movies.
Never to this extent.
They take that trick and they push it every time. They had a long cut in Goodfellas, and they had another super long cut in Boogie Nights, and everybody just started creaming their jeans. Then they made like Birdman, where they like, you know.
Birdman's the only other one that's done to this level. Really? But Birdman didn't walk through trenches, miles of trenches.
Right. I mean, some of these
through war.
Some of these long shots. I think also what is City? Children of Men had that super long shot where they, you know, and they thought the shot was ruined because they had a squib go off and it sprayed blood all over the camera. But they just kept rolling with it, and it evaporates by the end of the scene. But it's like a 15-minute shot.
Yeah.
It's at the end when they're in that rubble city and they're following, you know, and it's where you first see the baby and all that.
Yeah.
Crazy, you know, crazy long shots. And then, like, people like that cinematically. But it's definitely a hard pull to do as a director, and it's a lofty concept. It's certainly not the first time it's been done, but if it's done well.
A whole film?
Well, Birdman, the whole film. You know,
but I feel like that's about a guy doing a play as opposed to like a world war is happening. And as you're going through it, going like, what the fuck's going on?
Right.
There's clear spots where it stopped and then went back on. Like,
you have to tell a story. You can't just have, you know, there's been movies where they did that one movie with the guy, was it Lars von Trier? One of these guys did a movie where they shot the whole movie in real time with four cameras. And then when you watch it, it's 4 2-hour takes on the screen at the same time. It was like one of these Dogma 95 movies, very experimental.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, kind of a weird, that whole thing. You know, little Dogma thing. I'm just like, why? Like, just go ahead and use a Steadicam. Let's enjoy the fucking thing. I'm getting motion sick watching this shit. But when I think this movie, like, I think the writing was clearly like, you know, it's, again, we lose stuff at being in Korean, but the writing was there. The acting was there. The characters, I thought, you know, the actors did a really good job pulling these characters off. I really like the dad's, you know, attitude. He's like, you know, kind of like this weird, almost like a father knows best type figure. You know, he says grace, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the meal, and their meal is a bunch of cans of beer, but, you know, he does say a little grace, and there's like this weird sort of, you know, almost like wholesomeness to these people, right? Mm-hmm. And then you blend it with these other people who are also, the rich people are also quite wholesome. But then you start getting like, you know, once it's blended, you start getting this really bizarre, very dark, like, you know, other stuff that's happening. I mean, like, these people are like murdering each other for like, you know, the chance to live in this dingy basement under this rich guy's house, you know? It's like there's a weird psychology happening here. And it's all because these people are desperate and poor.
Yeah.
But living in the same society, I mean, this is like a statement. The statement of this movie is really powerful. It resonates in Korea. I think it should resonate here in America, where we have, you know, folks living in tents by the freeway. I think anybody, you know, who's paying attention to what's happening, I think, you know, this is what capitalism's doing to the human race. It's separating the haves and the have-nots in these really weird, weird ways. And this movie kind of, you know, puts them all together, blends these people, and it's beautiful what comes out.
It does blow my mind, though, that there are people that'll watch this that are rich who won't get that, who will just completely miss that this is, that it's a statement on capitalism or the system or whatever. And they'll just be like, ah, those people stealing. They're just stealing.
Yeah, what a scary movie. This is why we don't hire anybody.
I mean, just like people can be fans of Star Trek and still be racist and not really get the metaphors.
Right.
Like, oh, wow, I don't need to be lectured to by all this stuff. Like, just shoot things. Like, that's not what this is about. Like,
Star Trek because spaceships go boom.
Like, you gotta, like, if you like Star Trek, you gotta be a little dissatisfied with capitalism. Like,
well, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
There's literally no money in Star Trek. There's they live in a post money society. They even talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
And they're integrated and they're diverse and people have a chance to follow their ambitions and that's what I love about it though. Like, that's, you know, people now, there's a lot of debating in America over what our society is going to look like. And we have Bernie out there really pushing hard for the socialism. And some people are like, hey, you know, if you just give people a house and you just give them money, like, you know, they're not going to amount to anything. They're just going to be a bunch of losers. Right. But I actually think that if you give people their fundamentals, the human nature is to try to be better at stuff. I mean, these poor people in this movie, they're actually quite capable. They forged very complex documents. They were they went to the computer lab at the library or whatever to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were actually like very hard working people. They were kind of diligent about their jobs. Like, they all got called in on a day off and showed up to fucking work, you know?
Yeah.
Even though the whole work thing was a sham, they showed up. Like, you could tell that they were all, like, when in that scene, there's sort of a little bit of it's almost a montage where they show the four of them having to do their jobs for the day and how they're all exhausted. You can tell.
And here's the thing. They weren't, they were grifters, right? They cheated their way into their jobs, but they still had a job. They weren't just going and getting money. They all tricked their ways, being maybe unqualified. Well, maybe one guy was unqualified. No, two of them were unqualified.
They were all unqualified.
But it wasn't like they were getting just money handed to them. They still had to do the work.
They weren't scamming. No, they were working hard. And then at one point when they were, when the old housemaid family and new housemaid family were kind of arguing over the photo and whether just, you know, to send it. And the dad's like, don't send that photo. You're going to upset these poor people, you know?
Yeah.
And he has like this weird empathy for them, you know, like,
oh, she would freak out. The mom would have freaked out.
Oh, they would have freaked out like crazy. But, you know, he was like, hey, you're going to freak these poor people out. Like, yeah, we're all fighting here, but don't bring them into it. You know, like they don't deserve this. You know, there was like this reverence for the people that had the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that feeling of like us versus them, even right before the son goes downstairs and he's looking at the party and he says, do I belong here? Do I look to you like I belong in the situation? And the daughter is just kind of like, I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. She's completely clueless. The same way the people who see this movie are not going to get the message of it, but she's clueless. She has no idea what he's talking about because she doesn't know that he lives in this dingy little apartment that's like subterranean, fills with sewage when it rains.
I'm curious if they thought that they were that, like, people in their jobs, if they should be living in a better place than where they did, or if it was just completely thoughtless. Like, do you think that the people they paid, how much they paid, should they have been living where they did?
I don't know. I have no idea. They never really discuss those people's pay. I have a lady who comes to my house every 2, sometimes 3 weeks, and she cleans for a couple hours. Yeah. Right? She does the toilet. She cleans the floors. She takes my stove apart and cleans it and puts it back together again, you know. And I really like having this lady because I'm, you know, I'm not a very clean person. But I sometimes wonder, like, when she goes home, does she clean like this at her house? Because my house looks fucking awesome by the time she's done. I love going. I love the days when she's there. I feel like it's a lot of money I pay her.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, you know, the money doesn't grow on trees for me. But
the kind of your money does grow, though. What do you mean?
Well, orchids grow on trees. Yeah, money doesn't grow on trees, but orchids do, and I sell those for the money. But, I wonder, like, this person, like, is her house look like this? Is her kitchen as clean as this? Like, it's always weird how, like, the auto mechanics get that car that barely runs, because, like, the last thing they want to do at the end of the day is fix a car, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know... You spend your day going and taking care of this other person's house, and then when you go home and you live in this, like, this dingy little basement apartment, you know, where people urinate in front of your kitchen window every night, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it is kind of a weird idea, like, you know, that people who hire people don't really know or care what that person lives like.
And so they knew the new housekeeper was staying there, and they call her and say, hey, we're going to be home in 8 minutes. Make me some Rom Dom. And I was actually incensed by that. I was like, you privileged motherfucker. Like, she doesn't even know she has to be working right now. Like, right. 'Cause I was watching her play. You expect her to drop what she's doing to go make you some damn soup. Right?
In 8 minutes.
Go make me some soup.
You were supposed to be gone for the week. This lady could have been doing anything. She could have been taking a bath. She could have been, she could have been rubbing one out. Like, you don't know what she was doing. She could have been doing anything.
Make me some Rom Dom right now. Like, it's a subtle entitlement. Like.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, that's kind of the point of the movie, too, is that, you know, they have all these... the people who are rich have all these privileges, and then all the people that came over
are literally beneath them.
They're literally beneath them, yeah.
You all are beneath us.
Yeah, literally. The smell. Yeah. It smells like the subway. I haven't been on the subway in 20 years, right? And then, like, you know, the people that come over, and they come over on this impromptu party, thrown together last minute.
Cello.
Right, there's a cello and an opera singer, a fucking opera singer, and this amazing cake. You know, and
should we just have a party? Should we do it?
Yeah. Should we just do it? Let's just do it.
Have everyone over.
I want the tables in what is it? She's like those swans, a crane wing formation or whatever, you know, with the teepee in the middle.
Quiet, he's sleeping. He's right. Sleeping. Yeah, right. Oh, fuck you.
They're setting up the table. Well, that's also like, I think that's also kind of a thing with, I think with Korean culture is that they definitely indulge young males,
yeah,
and culturally speaking, like, it's just you get a lot of these. I've heard some stories about, you know, cousin so and so's, the, you know, the boy's spoiled and doesn't do anything, and the girls have to work.
It's until there's a certain age, and then they're like, now you gotta fucking do everything.
You gotta go get a job,
yeah, you motherfucker.
You're gonna work. You're gonna support everybody.
We're about out of time here. But I go see the movie. I'll put my box score review out tomorrow or Monday. It'll already be out before this drops, I guess. And I think you seem to suggest people to see it, right?
I enjoy this movie. Yeah, I would definitely suggest people check it out. I think that it's nice seeing a movie that's good that's not. Doesn't have superpowers in it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's an actual movie. I miss movies. I miss when movies were just stories that people told. It's an interesting story. And it's, if you listen to all of this, hopefully we didn't ruin it too much for you, but it is an interesting story. And I think that there are many layers to it that people can kind of delve into.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it, whether we spoiled anything or not. So go check that out. And thanks for listening. As always. All right. Thanks for coming in, Joe.
I appreciate it.
All right. Check out Emerald City Orchids and go buy all your orchids there.
Yeah.
All
your orchid needs.
Okay.
One location.
And rent rent his venue out. Whoever
have
you are.
We'll have your party at our place.
Have your party at the Orchid Palace. Hey, Black and a Half.
Live long and prosper and prosper and prosper and prosper and prosper.